not only in just discussing this warrior poet way and mindset and this mission, but you've also become a voice in talking about the issues that we are faced with as a nation. And so did you intentionally make that shift?
I did intentionally make the shift.
Okay, tell me about that.
I was doing it as a visceral and upset reaction.
Okay.
Before it was a conscious thought of like I was reacting to the socio-political and moral, you know, falling moral landscape. I was reacting to it with upset, then did a check. I'm like, oh, wow, I'm really going political here.
When did that happen?
Around the same time for you, I think. I think it was 2019, where it was a growing thing as I started pressing in a little bit, then more, and then more. And I did it reluctantly and with great upset. I didn't want I was irritated that here I am talking politics. I hate politics.
Same here, man.
I despise it. I still to this day do not like politics. I like theology. I like philosophy.
Yeah.
I like life balance. I like training. But politics, I have no appetite, no stomach, no inclination to talk politics. I don't like the profession. For me to get into politics, the Lord would have to call me to it. And I would say, please find someone else. And he'd have to say, no, you go do it. I have no desire to do that. Mm-hmm. But the problem is politics has gobbled everything up. All there is politics now. You want to talk about the weather? The weather used to be the most benign subject there is. And now, nope, climate change. You may trigger someone. Everything there is.
Any collateral damage that you can accept, and we'll be standing by over.
Look at that guy on the other end. He's digging something.
Yep, Roger, he's digging right now. I can see him.
All right. Yeah, we need to finish that clip in a second. Anyway, we came in with the clip that I mentioned. I think I mentioned it yesterday. I think I mentioned it the day before. Maybe we can finish that here in a moment. John Lovell talking about how everything's been gobbled up by politics. Everything's political. And he gets into it and unpacks that a little bit. You want to talk about the weather? That used to be the most benign subject there is. Used to be the entry point. It was kind of like the, you know, how if you knew some folks in the World War II era, which we all probably have, that was kind of a thing, you know. They would get together as soon as they see each other, they start talking about the weather. And to the casual observer, that might seem strange, but this to me is a non-confrontational entry point to conversation. There was nothing politicized about, hey, you know, it looks like it's going to rain or whatever. Sure has been cold lately. Or man, what a warm spell. And it was a way to ease into conversation, some of which may or may not be controversial. A way to kind of say, you know, shall we dance or may I have this dance kind of thing. And now, as John Lovell pointed out, everything has been gobbled up by politics. Politics is all there is. And again, politics is skullduggery, warfare by contemptible means. And there is the inception element of it, you know, the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations shaping the influencers to shape the perception and thereby the behavior of the masses. Politics is skullduggery, warfare by contemptible means. You know, we all have in the back of our minds the idea of the nobility of war somehow, somewhere. Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai, for example, is one of those kinds of movies. There are others. Tell me how he died. I will tell you how he lived. And, you know, Ken Watanabe was outstanding. You know, this idea of the nobility of war. And the samurai in particular, as opposed to the ninja, as, you know, ideological opposites or conceptual opposites. So this all is sort of encompassed in the concept of perception management. It's just amazing how we are overrun by perception management campaigns of various assorted varieties and origins. But I would say that it's all warfare. All warfare is perception management, and all perception management warfare, which includes things at the meta level, like, you know, it's not war unless there are tanks rolling through the streets and planes flying overhead dropping bombs. Perception management. Well, it's not war if that's not happening. You don't see troops in the streets. It's not war. Well, perception management. Because if you go back to Sun Tzu, what does he say is the acme of skill? To win 100 victories in 100 battles is not the acme of skill. To subdue the enemy without fighting is the acme of skill. How about to have the enemy subdue themselves and think it was their own idea? Maybe that's the acme of skill. What the ancients called a clever fighter is not one who only wins, but excels in winning with ease. To subdue the enemy without fighting is the acme of skill. Most people, you know, it's just astonishing. And the cliche, you know, that it's easier to fool someone than to convince them they've been fooled. So how does all of this work? Just quickly. You know, before I continue, a couple of things. First of all, Tom, I guess we missed you. Sorry about that. Feel free to call back. Also, back to the announcements. We still have the Rebel Madman Rabble Razor quilt raffle in full effect through the end of the month, which is coming up quickly. The lucky winner of the Rabble Razor will receive a package gift containing a Confederate battle flag quilt, RBN mug, t-shirt, business cards, and bumper stickers. Fabulous cash and prizes. Call 800-724-2719 extension 3 and make a donation of $250 or more for your chance to win this fabulous packaged gift. And you can also make donations to support the network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org. Click the donate button and do what comes next. You can also call 800-724-2719 extension 3 and make a donation, or mail check or money order to payable to RBN and send it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Thank you to those who do support the network. It is a listener supported network. And if you haven't or haven't in a while, please consider doing so. It takes a village to support the network. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but it's true. There's no Ford Foundation grant. So perception management can we back that clip up and finish the clip, back it up to like 121.45 or so where you were, and we'll just finish the rest of the few minutes that are left in that one, and then I got to play the other one as the explainer, because if I don't, then people will say, well, you know, you basically gave your endorsement. No, just because we play a clip is not necessarily to be construed as an endorsement of any person or thing. So let's put on our thinking caps and think for ourselves. So can we back up? Back up to 121.45. Okay. Yeah, hearing, you know, speaking of perception management, gosh, so much is perception management and the alchemical metaphysicians trying to mess with our heads, get us to think things that are not true, not believe things that are true. Deception is the order of the day. Speaking of Sun Tzu, back to Sun Tzu, you know, all warfare is based on deception. So you want to distort the perception of your adversary. When we're able to attack, we seem unable. When using forces, we must appear inactive. When we're near, we must appear far. When we're far, we must appear near. Distorted perception. So at what point do you acknowledge that you're creating... You know, this has a very awful ripple effect. And, you know, there's also a warped, you know, speaking of the nobility of war, there's also the warped correlation of seeking justice. You know, there's the Equalizer series with Denzel, for example, and... You know, the latest one has him in the little Italian village, and he says, I like it here. I think I want to stay here. And, you know, if you guys can't mind your own business, justice is coming. And people, that appeals deep down in the darkest recesses of all of us, because we're made that way, to want justice. And if you read the Bible, ultimately... Jesus returns to, and he brings justice and restores things and righteousness. And I think that's why that appeals to all of us. But, you know, again, I mean, it's perception management, and then what sort of gets peeled off of that and sends us in a different direction, kind of like the story of Gandhi that I was talking about earlier. You know, how often do we lie to ourselves and say, no, that's what I want. I want... peaceful, you know, nonviolent, noncompliance, only to really realize deep down in our hearts, as is depicted in the movie, that maybe that's not what I really want. What I really want is just to, you know, I want to be the guy who gets the upper leg, you know, the pedagogy of the oppressed, as Paulo Freire put it, the oppressor-oppressed paradigm. And it's interesting you know, the dehumanization and the subjugation that goes on, and that we end up, as people like Freire have observed, we end up dehumanizing ourselves. When all you have is perception management campaigns, we are dehumanizing ourselves as much as one another, because again, it's a very perceptive observation. Speaking of perception, the authors of Perception Management of the Art of War realize, therefore, we propose that we can direct propaganda only toward ourselves. And that happens as much as anything. You know, think of Sam Kean's Faces of the Enemy, for example. And then it's an even more sobering realization when you read Faces of the Enemy, and you realize that, you know, over the course of the 20th century, for example, the faces of the enemy, reflections of the hostile imagination, were very similar images from nation to nation. And the thematic elements were very consistent. How is that happening? Also shocking and horrifying, Patrick Clausen. You know, what's in a word? What's in a word? Episode. Realizing that, you know, every major conflict, everybody campaigns as the, you know, the peacetime candidate, peacetime president, for example, the candidate who will not get us into war, make sure we stay out of the war. Only, oops, we ended up in war. Sorry about that. So, you know, Patrick Clausen reminds us, establishment, you know, foreign policy expert. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II. As David mentioned, you may recall, we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. All these episodes, the Pearl Harbor episode, the Lusitania episode, the Gulf of Tonkin episode, which never happened, by the way. The USS Maine episode, the Fort Sumter episode. And he's talking about the Iranians. So what are we going to do? What are we seeing lately? By the way, quickly, without taking too much time, first time happenstance, second time coincidence, third time enemy action. I mentioned that I've had a problem with some things recently that we've heard. The narrative about the two SEALs that went MIA. Lloyd Austin goes AWOL / MIA, whichever. I would say MIA. Everybody else is saying AWOL, which is interesting. Words mean things. Speaking of perception management. So Lloyd Austin goes AWOL, or MIA, as I would say. Then two SEALs go MIA. And then we see that missile attacks against Iran-backed forces, or, you know, of Houthi rebels, continue. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too far into things, but I think it's interesting. So we have all these episodes, including Iran. Patrick Clausen says, so if in fact the Iranians aren't going to compromise, what does that mean? I think it means what Clausewitz said. War, therefore, is an act of violence to compel our opponent to fulfill our will. So if in fact the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if someone else started the war.
Get into politics, the Lord would have, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, he's spelling it out. Best if someone else started the war. How does that work? False flag. Strategy of tension sort of episodes. That's how it works. Episode is an interesting word too. An incident or event that is part of a progression or a larger sequence. An incident or action standing out by itself but more or less connected with a complete series of events. Stick around, we'll be right back.
And I started a blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Speaking of perception management and episodes, I wonder how the Christian Zionists would feel if they found out about the USS Liberty. What do you suppose they would say about that? I've made some remarks about some of these things recently. I intend to maybe make a few more, but Allison Weir's Talking Stick TV talk back in 2014, I think still stands as one of the best resources. But, you know, briefly on this, speaking of perception management, you know, I see some things floating around on social media depicting folks in a very one-sided, idiotic sort of fashion. Man on the street at protests, you know, from the river to the sea, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, somebody asks, well, which river, which sea? And, you know, so I wonder how many people were cut out who knew the river is the Jordan and the sea is the Mediterranean. Not to mention, obviously, always be on the lookout for crowdsondemand.com, your home for protests, rallies, advocacy, audiences, PR stunts, and political events. Services available nationwide. How do you know it's not that? Managing your perception. I'll give you some very specific examples from Axios after the next segment. But, you know, looking at some of these things, sometimes the Dunning-Kruger effect gets the best of even the best of us. Speaking of easier to fool someone than to convince them they've been fooled, it was Balthasar Gracian in his book, The Art of Worldly Wisdom, back in 1647, who wrote, "Every blockhead is thoroughly persuaded that he is in the right. And everyone who is all too firmly persuaded is a blockhead. And the more erroneous is his judgment, the greater is the tenacity with which he holds it." Talk about Dunning-Kruger effect in full effect. So regarding the modern so-called Israel, particularly in light of the escalating conflicts in the region, some food for thought for Christian Zionists, so-called. How are the protests from coast to coast, you know, Seattle and New York City in particular, arranged the same weekend as the alleged attacks? Attacks happened on Saturday. You got protests coast to coast on Sunday, including hundreds of alleged protesters and from or on both sides of the issue. Is that even humanly possible in real time? I think it's a rhetorical question. The answer is no. What is Zionism? If you don't know, go listen to Joe Biden in his Shalom TV interview, April 2007. Say, when I was a young senator, I used to say, if I were a Jew, I'd be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. Come on, man. Is Zionism good for America? Dorothy Thompson is regarded by some as the first lady of American journalism. Is recognized by Time magazine in 1939 as equal in influence to First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. That's something, man. Do the women's libbers know that, by the way? You know, she's going to be the first woman of color to run for president. I guess you never heard of Shirley Chisholm, did you? Never have. Have you? After being warned that hostility toward Israel was, in the American press world, almost the definition of professional suicide, Dorothy Thompson eventually concluded that Zionism was a recipe for perpetual war. You can even read that on Wikipedia. And, of course, Alison Weir talks about it in that Talking Stick TV talk that she did back in 2014. What is Frank Kitson's counter-gang strategy? From his books, Gangs and Counter-Gangs, published in 1960, and Low Intensity Operations, Subversion, Insurgency, and Peacekeeping, and published in 1971. What is the counter-gang strategy? How did the Islamic Resistance Movement, a.k.a. Hamas, which is a total put-up job as far as naming goes, it's in the Bible. No, it's not. And that's perception management. How did it come to be, though? Did the so-called State of Israel incubate it just to destroy it and everywhere it had been allowed to incubate, including schools and hospitals? Maybe. Watch Mehdi Hassan's video for The Intercept on YouTube titled Blowback, How Israel Helped Create Hamas. Short video. I forget. It's less than 10 minutes. But short. And there's more. Food for thought. But, you know, easier to fool someone than to convince them they've been fooled. We're headed into a break, right? Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break. Okay, we're not headed into a break. We're back. All right, well, then I will continue on this line then. Speaking of perception management, how do the Christian Zionists feel about this kind of stuff? Is this so-called Israel the biblical Israel, i.e. the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob? See also the Balfour Declaration, the British Mandate, the Jewish-Ottoman Land Company, Herzl's World Zionist Congress, William E. Blackstone. Louis Brandeis says, you know, some call Herzl the father of Zionism, but man, I think you, William E. Blackstone, could be very easily be called the father of Zionism. Baron Edmund James de Rothschild's 19th century $50 million land purchases, and so on and so on. I've mentioned excerpts from Herzl's, the Jewish Ottoman Land Company, Herzl's Blueprint for the Colonization of Palestine by Waleed Khalidi back in 1993. How do the Christian Zionists feel about that? From the piece, you know, from the beginning of Khalidi's piece, some 60 years ago, this is 1993, so that's 1933 or so. As appendix one of his magisterial De Zionische Bewegung, the Zionist movement, Adolf Baum, a leading authority on early Zionism, published the full text of a remarkable document from the Herzl archives in Vienna. This is the draft of a proposed agreement. What happened in World War I, by the way? You know, World War I results in the breakup of the Ottoman Empire and, you know, the Balkanization of the Ottoman Empire. And suddenly Palestine is up for grabs. So, when did World War I start? It was after the turn of the 20th century, wasn't it? Listen closely. Adolf Baum, a leading authority on early Zionism, published a full text of a remarkable document from the Herzl archives in Vienna. This is the draft of a proposed agreement, a charter, between the World Zionist Organization, who the heck are these guys, and the Ottoman government concerning the, quote, privileges, rights, liabilities, and duties of the Jewish Ottoman Land Company, JOLC, for the settlement of Palestine and Syria. A draft of a proposed agreement between the World Zionist Organization and the Ottoman government concerning privileges, rights, liabilities, and duties of the Jewish Ottoman Land Company. For some reason, I feel harbingers of East India Company malfeasance. The document does not bear a date, but seems to have been drawn up sometime between the summer of 1901 and 1902. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was before World War I. More than a decade before World War I. How is that possible? Its author seemed to have been principally Theodor Herzl, the founder of Zionism, and Arminius Vainbury, a Hungarian Orientalist of Jewish descent. Vainbury was not only close to Herzl, but also Abdul Hamid, the Ottoman Sultan. So they're already carving Palestine and Syria up a decade before war breaks out, years after which we, you know, begin the process of carving up a place that was already planned to be carved up more than a decade before war breaks out. Think about it. So, you know, for the Christian Zionist, what is Zion, biblically speaking? So what does it mean to be a Zionist, and is there a correlation there? Isaiah 66:8, let's deal with that. Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such thing? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. See, God can reestablish Israel. What about Ezekiel's dry bones? Are you sure that's the physical and that not the looking forward to the spiritual? It's interesting that in the Old Testament, you know, the Christian basically can sort of look with disdain or ridicule on the Old Testament Jew, saying, you know, how could you not see your Messiah after all these thousands of years you've been waiting? Here he comes, his triumphant arrival, you know, includes dozens of prophetic fulfillments. How could you not know? This is him. This is he. The statistical probability of, you know, this happening is beyond happenstance or coincidence. Certainly won't happen twice. How could you not know? And yet, the same Christian cannot see the future fulfillment of certain things. You know, things like in Romans 2 and 9, the children of the promise, or the new Jerusalem, and so on and so on. And so much of those things are tied up in the eschatological things that you read in Revelation, for example. In simple terms, who is the bride? What is it? Galatians chapter 2, I want to say. That the example is given. Is it Galatians 2? Or is it 3? I'm pretty sure it's Galatians. I know how to find it real fast. Jerusalem. The husband that Jerusalem rejected, essentially. Galatians 4, not 2. Galatians 4:27. And this is an allegory, by the way. Tell me, you who want to be under the law, do you not listen to the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by the bondwoman, one by the free woman. But the son by the bondwoman was born according to the flesh, and the son by the free woman through the promise. This is allegorically speaking, for these women are two covenants, one proceeding from Mount Sinai, bearing children who are to be slaves. She is Hagar. Now, this Hagar's Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present Jerusalem. For she is in slavery with her children, but the Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother. For it is written, rejoice, barren woman who does not bear. Break forth and shout, you who are not in labor. For more numerous are the children of the desolate than of the one who has a husband. Who's the husband then? But the Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother. That's interesting. Anyway. Who's the bride of Christ? Revelation 21, 2, 9, and 10. Side notes. So Isaiah 66:8. For the Christian Zionist, is that concerning Israel or is that concerning Jerusalem? Is Isaiah 66 primarily regarding Israel or Jerusalem? was this modern day so-called Israel really created in a day? Again, see the Balfour Declaration, British Mandate, Jewish Ottoman Land Company, Herzl's World Zionist Congress, William E. Blackstone, Baron Edmund James de Rothschild, Louis Brandeis, all the other intriguers along the way. Was it really created in a day, air quotes, from John Boyer Bell's Terror Out of Zion, published back in 1976, page 12? Theodore Herzl regrouped in August 1897 and created a new organization. Over 200 delegates to the Zionist Congress met in Basel for 3 days and established the World Zionist Organization. Herzl felt that the first great practical step had been taken. Toward what? And he was quoted as saying, Herzl, Theodore Herzl, if I had to sum up what happened at the Congress of Basel, the first Congress in August 1897, he said, I would say that I founded the Jewish state. That is the modern so-called Israel. Should have called it Herzlstan, though. That would have been less confusing and misleading to people. But, you know, obviously, confusion and deception was the order, perception management. So he said, if I had to sum up what happened at the Congress of Basel, I would say that I founded the Jewish state. This would provoke universal laughter today. And again, this is before, you know, before World War One, this territory is not even for sale, so to speak. So he says, this would provoke universal laughter today, but perhaps in 20 years, and certainly in 50, it will be there for all the world to see. And what do you know about that? Almost 50 years to the day, this thing is recognized. So was Herzl psychic, or is there a long game plan in effect? And for what purpose? To what end? Perhaps modern so-called Israel should rightly be called Herzlstan. Then it wouldn't be so misleading. There is the issue of Joshua chapter 21. There are several covenants. That's probably a subject for a different day, but, you know, in Joshua 21, and the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give them, to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. And the Lord gave them rest round about according to all that he sware unto their fathers, and there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. There failed not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. What's left out of all? But, you know, since we in America are confused these days about what shall not be infringed means, maybe all came to pass doesn't mean what it means either. So what's left to fulfill? Is there any future or remaining fulfillment concerning the Jerusalem of old? Or the New Jerusalem? Revelation 3:12, again 21:2, 9, and 10. Which is above, again Galatians 4:26 and 27. What about Greater Israel? Eretz Israel, the Yanan plan, Oded Yanan, etc., etc. What about the Israeli terrorists? The Stern Gang and the Irgun, which become the revisionist Zionists of today, you know, the Bibi Netanyahu's. Are the revisionist Zionists descendants of biblical Israel? That's a rhetorical question if ever there was one. So, you know, a final thought on this stuff. This is a tangent, but, you know, this really is sort of at the heart of perception management, because this is an issue that we just can't get away from. Donald Trump, you know, factors in closely to the colliding of forces together, the clash of civilizations. How do you collide forces together? Well, if they're at peace with one another, impossible to collide them together. You have to get them upset, perception management. So, final thought on this stuff. We know Satan is a usurper, Genesis 3, who likes to influence, persuade, suggest, put ideas in people's heads. Genesis 3:1, Genesis 3:4 and 5, Job 1:9-11, and 2:4-6, Matthew 4:6. Satan is a master counterfeiter, Isaiah 14:13-16, prone to deception, John 8:44, including misappropriation of context, Matthew 4:3-11. Disguising himself as an angel of light, 2 Corinthians 11:13-15. Jesus himself reiterated four times, no less, his warning or warnings to believers, no less, of the coming deception, prefacing his Olivet discourse, which you can find in Matthew 24:25, Mark 13, and Luke 21. He prefaced his responses saying, "See to it that no one misleads you." Matthew 24:4. We also know that Satan is the prince of the power of the air. Ephesians 2:2. So does that include the airwaves? We also know that the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. 1 John 5:19. So my question is, how do we know we aren't being deceived? Our perception managed on a grand scale. Particularly along these lines. The etymology of the word anti-Semitism derives from the descendants of Noah's son Shem. Who and where are the Semitic peoples of today? And it's interesting how these questions, you know, there are folks who have come along and allegedly have answers, but they don't answer, and they lead to more chaos, more confusion, and more conflict. Furthermore, who is able to distinguish today between the Old Testament Israelites and modern-day Israelis? Are they synonymous? I would argue they're not. In the Christian New Testament sense, who is a Jew? See Romans chapter 2 and chapter 9. This always gets sidestepped. Why don't we talk about this? It's interesting that in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, Jesus himself identifies those who say they're Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Who are they? Interestingly, The Who is a Jew Wikipedia entry opens with the sentence, "Who is a Jew?" It's a basic question about Jewish identity, considerations of Jewish self-identification. Self-identification? Isn't God Almighty the one and only true identifier? Satanic Zionism and the distinction between Old Testament Israel and past and future Jerusalem are also important Bible considerations. Most people don't look closely enough at the distinction between Israel and Jerusalem, I think, in simple terms. Those passages ostensibly concerning Israel, if you look closer, you've been fed Israel, Israel. You look closer, a lot of the time, it's Jerusalem, Jerusalem. A lot of perception management, a lot of deception. I think of John Hagee's book, In Defense of Israel. and him, you know, that video. And when I heard it on the radio, I almost ran off the road. In my book, In Defense of Israel, I will prove that Jesus did not come to earth to be the Messiah. I almost ran off the road. I guess John Hagee hasn't read his Bible, the New Testament anyway, because the New Testament opens Matthew 1:1, the record of the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah. I guess he hasn't read his Bible. Maybe the New Testament is missing from his Bible. John Hagee, generational pastor, doesn't know that Matthew 1:1 says the record of the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah. A lot of perception management. To what end? For what purpose? So, you know, there are other examples. I was going to mention some examples from Axios, speaking of Trump and the politics of what's been going on lately. What do you suppose is the purpose of getting people all excited? I saw somebody posted on Twitter. Josh Marshall, breaking from Axios, Trump unable to close the deal, asks Ronna McDaniel to make Haley drop out. I actually looked for and he has a picture of an article by Aaron Doherty over at Axios. I think it's the article published yesterday titled Trump Allies Target Nikki Haley in Extreme Pressure Campaign. I don't see anywhere where I find no evidence that, as this person puts it, Trump asks Ronna McDaniel to make Haley drop out. I don't see where that happened. But I see lots of comments, who knows if they're sock puppets, to the effect of buying into the nonsense without vetting it. This person doesn't even cite the Axios article. Doesn't source it. So, you know, and just a few other examples. We'll go to the phones here in a second. But, you know, just what does this do? What is this doing? Think about perception management. Some headlines from Axios. Pew, over a quarter of U.S. adults don't identify with a religion. And, of course, they do there at Axios. They have their little why it matters. This is why it matters. Ooh, Meta. In keeping with a global increase in the number of people without a religious affiliation. Wow, more people are doing that. I guess science is really, you know, Richard Dawkins is right. Science is the language of, you know, the universal language that supersedes religion and Christianity even. Speaking of supersessionism, but not really. You know, God is the author of real science, not pseudoscience. Romans chapter 1. So, you know, this just leads people to believe something that's not true. Again, I think gosh, what's his name? Religion is the root of culture. Culture is the root of politics. That guy. What's his name? You know what I'm talking about. Richard John Newhouse. Anyway, he's the guy who said that, and I think he's right. No, you know, without a religious affiliation is disingenuous and misleading. So, perception management. Anyway, other headlines quickly. Less than 250,000 Holocaust survivors remain worldwide, study finds. The, you know, Godwin's Law is a thing. I think, what is the Holocaust denial equivalent of Godwin's law? Sooner or later, you're going to, you know, any online discussion will bump into the Holocaust denial issue. John Stewart returning as part-time host of The Daily Show through the election. That's interesting. Speaking of Trump, I mentioned the Trump allies target Nikki Haley and extreme pressure campaign. And what was the other one? U.S. steps. No, that's not it. Oh, it was Trump threatens to blacklist big Nikki Haley donors. A few other headlines. U.S. steps up strikes on Iranian proxies in Iraq and Yemen because, you know, if Iran is unwilling to compromise, then it would be best if someone else starts the war, Patrick Claussen says. How about this? AI's next fight is over whose values it should hold. There's no such thing as an AI system without values, and that means this newest technology platform must navigate partisan rifts. Remember how in the early days we heard that all AI is racist? Why is that? Few restaurant headlines. The restaurant industry has a heartbeat after years on life support. It's carnage everywhere for restaurant owners facing high costs and new arrivals. But then this, a restaurant robot might mix your next cocktail. He can make 65 to 70 drinks an hour, never needs a bathroom break, and doesn't ask for a tip. And soon he'll be able to make conversation and take your order. That's fun. How about this one? Last headline. Abortion ban states have seen 65,000 pregnancies from rape, comma, study estimates. So it's just an estimate. It's just a made-up number, but, you know, your mind locks on to the stuff before the comma. Abortion ban states have seen 65,000 pregnancies from rape, comma, study estimates. Just an estimate. But, you know, like the ex post, Trump unable to close deal asked Ron and McDaniel to make Haley drop out. People will run with it, undoubtedly. Anyway, hopefully you see the management of perception in these things and the idea that these things are designed to get people stirred up, upset, fighting with one another. But I would remind everyone again, in Ephesians 6, you know, we read that we wrestle not against flesh and blood. And as much as these perception management campaigns are intended to get us upset with one another, best that we always remember, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So put on the full armor of God so that you may stand against the evil, withstand in the evil day, having done all to stand. Anyway, I hope it was informative. Tom and Mike, sorry we missed you guys. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Please pray for one another and support the network. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new Easy 4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.